Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. If you are a first or second time home buyer, there are lots of interesting things happening in Baltimore. You may be able to get a house. 1-800-638-7781 is the number. You can also go to steinershow.org and click on the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development banner on our website. We are joined here in the studio now by State Senator Catherine Pugh from Baltimore City and Delegate Heather Mazur, who is a delegate from Montgomery County. And welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Good to have you both in the studio at the same time. That's great.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So I said earlier in the show, and folks, this is one I think that this is a really interesting conversation. I want you to participate in a 410-319-8888 because the stats that I read earlier about Maryland being the 13th worst state for low birth weight babies and 9th worst in infant mortality, which is a horrendous number. But this new bill that was passed with real bipartisan support, which is also shocking given the state of politics in the world today.
Oh, we know how to get it, though.
opens this door for 33,000 families?
35,000 women. 35,000 women become eligible as of January the 1st. And this really was an effort that Heather had started some years ago. And we came together to make sure that everybody understood the importance of this and why this needs to take place, and especially in a city like Baltimore, Prince George's County, and other jurisdictions around the state, and how much money this is going to save the state. It took a while for us to get it done because it was really trying to explain to people, one, we're going to save the state $40 million a year, but at the same time, we're going to save many young people and women out there who get pregnant because, you know, that's what happens in the state of Maryland. We'll give you family planning services once you've had a child. But what about all of those women who don't have family planning services? And so what we believe that this will do and what we know by virtue of what other states have shown us is that we will prevent a number of pregnancies from taking place, which is where the savings comes in. But at the same time, we provide the opportunity for women who to not become pregnant and to be able to live more full and productive lives. And I'll tell you a little story later on, but this was really an effort to educate the public and to educate our legislators and to educate our communities on what can be done. When you look closely at some of the way that we fund specific programs here in the state of Maryland.
Heather, so talk a bit about the genesis of this and what the problem was that struck you and why you pushed for this bill and built this struggle.
Well, as you already mentioned, our numbers in Maryland were incredibly troubling. We're the wealthiest state in the nation, and we could do better than what we have been doing for infant mortality rates and to improve maternal health. What appealed to me about this issue is an opportunity to actually bridge the social wedge gap that exists between liberals and conservatives on issues like family planning. You had the Congress deciding to potentially close down the federal government last March over debates on whether or not to do federal funding of family planning services and support for Planned Parenthood, which was one of the most ridiculous arguments I had ever heard, because no matter what your opinion is on reproductive rights, where we all can agree is that by eliminating unintended pregnancies, everybody wins. This bill was an approach to bridge that gap and bring everyone together. It helps mothers and babies by giving moms access to family planning services early. They're empowered to have children when it makes sense for them. It gives them an opportunity to break cycles of poverty, to stay in college, get a degree, enter the workforce when it works for them, and have access to health care that gives prenatal services to their babies so that we can tackle the low infant birth weights. It helps on the conservative side to lowering the abortion rate because of tackling unintended pregnancies. And it makes smart fiscal sense because we are able to save $20 to $40 million a year by making this change. It's a very simple change in law. As Senator Pugh said, it used to be that in Maryland you qualified for these services after you got pregnant and already had your first child. So we'd help you with your second or third or fourth baby, but not that all important. All that not the all-important first pregnancy. And now women will get it just based on their income. Mm-hmm. All women at or below 200% of poverty in Maryland, which is about $22,000 a year of income, will have access to this really key, important family planning service. And so one of the things that Senator Pugh and I have been doing around the state is making sure that women are aware of this. It's not enough to pass a good piece of legislation. We have to make sure that it gets implemented and that all the women we're seeking to help are aware of these services. We've been working with the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, and under Secretary Sharfstein's leadership, they've been incredibly responsive in helping us create a brand new application so that between now and January 1st, when the new benefits are available, we can get out there, spread the news, get women signed up today, get that paperwork processed so that on January 1st, let's hit the go button and get these women enrolled in services and not have a 30 to 45 day delay in getting the applications processed.
So see, what we'd like to see is that on January 1st, that 35,000 applications are piled up, that people have actually applied. Because as Heather just said, oftentimes we'll implement legislation and people just don't take advantage of it. And I can tell you this is very significant, especially as it relates to Baltimore City. When you think of the number, and we're talking about women, but we're also talking about teenagers as well who are not accessing these kinds of service. We have a high teenage pregnancy rate.
So teenagers can avail themselves of the service as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I can tell you some sad stories. I was telling Heather the last time when we had a press conference that I happened to be at a school over in West Baltimore, and the young people were talking about the need to, you know, to get a better education. And one young lady walked up to me afterwards and said, you know, she needed a job. She was 14 years old. She's a 10-month-old baby. Mm-hmm. And her mother's unemployed and her father's unemployed. And so she's going to struggle. She's struggling to finish high school. We're talking about women finishing college. We're talking about young people struggling to finish high school. And so these kinds of services are available to them. I mean, you can go to your neighborhood clinics. You can check with your health plans to find out if, in fact, you know, they're offering these services because they should. We know that this is going to make a difference in the lives of many, many young women. And to get them educated to the process about going, filling out these applications, let's get them available to them.
So if folks out there have a question about this, please call us at 410-319-8888. This is pretty groundbreaking legislation. 35,000 women will now be able to avail themselves of family planning services before you have families, mm-hmm. to help plan out your lives. It also empowers women mm-hmm. To take control of their own lives. Mm-hmm. So join us here, 410-319-8888. Delegate Heather Mazier was one of the people who pushed this legislation for several years. It's gotten through. Senator Catherine Pugh is with us as well. They're part of this. They want to talk to all of you to avail yourself of these services. 410-319-8888. But people have to apply? Is that what you said?
Well, there's an application process, and, you know, they have to, they can call. There's a medical assistance hotline they can call, and the number there is 1-855-692-4993. There's another number, if you just have questions, 1-800-456-8900. There's so many people who are eligible, and there's so many services that are covered. I mean, this is just not abortion services or those kind of things. This is talking about pelvic exams, screenings such as pap smears, all right. Those things are available, and just how to plan your life. You know, questions that young people and women have that aren't being answered or made available to them as well.
Heather?
Yeah, I think it's important to point out that it's not just birth control mm-hmm. that is being offered here. Mm-hmm. It's a whole package of women health services, breast and cervical cancer screenings, pregnancy counseling, pelvic exams, a whole range of maternal health services that women need from the ages in which they start being sexually active until and through they decide to be mothers. But we want to empower women to make the decision to have a family when it works for them rather than because it accidentally happened and they weren't prepared. And to answer your question about the application, there is an application because you have to show what your income level is to qualify. But it's a very easy application to fill out. Mm-hmm. And we would really encourage women to go to their local community health centers, their health departments, family planning clinics. We're working with local African-American sororities, every kind of advocacy organization, Advocates for Children and Youth, Maryland, NARAL Pro-Choice, Planned Parenthood of Maryland, all the organizations that do a range of outreach and collaborations with women, particularly maternal health. They're there to help. They know about these applications. We force them to take, absolutely, very willingly, to take stacks of these applications home with them after all of our public events. And we have really great state staff workers prepared to expedite the applications and get women enrolled in these services. And I think in particular, it's good for college-age women to mm-hmm. consider their eligibility. Many of them who become independent of their family incomes, it's their own income that would be judged for eligibility. So there is no excuse for any woman on any college campus in the state of Maryland to not have access to free family planning services.
So this is a service that is being paid by Medicaid.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, mostly.
Yes, it is Medicaid, and I think the key point to for viewers to know is that the federal government gives a very generous match for states in this program. For every dollar that we spend in the state of Maryland on this program, the federal government gives us 90 cents back. And so all we had to do is come up with the cost to cover that 10% cost for this expansion. And then on the back end, because every pregnancy costs $19,000 to care for under the Medicaid program, we have that $20 to $40 million of savings because of all the unintended pregnancies at $19,000 a piece that the state won't be accruing. So this is truly a scenario where an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure in terms of both our funding and the difference it will make in women's lives.
And you can also go to, you can go to the internet, you can look up or even the phone book for those who are still, but community health centers, we in Baltimore, we have Total Health Care. We have, Druid Park Healthcare Clinic. They're all over. They're some at Mondawmin Mall. They're all around the community. So they're not very difficult to find, and they're easily accessible to everyone.
Let me open the phones here so folks can ask the questions they have at 410-319-8888. And let's go to Shelley in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Hi.
Shelley.
I just have a specific question about whether or not these healthcare just the health care coverage applies to individuals who do not have, proper immigration status, or they're without immigration documents.
No. The answer to that is no. No. You must show
citizen
legal immigration status in order to qualify.
So, but I mean, if someone applies for this, I mean, if somebody, let's say, who's a natural born citizen of the United States, and I mean, they don't have to show ID, right?
You have to show income. I mean, you have to show identification, and you have to show proof of income in order to qualify, because it is it's a percentage below the poverty rate. So that's why you have to fill out an application.
So it's for women who are single, making $22,000 or less. Is that what it is? Is that where we start?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And up to 200% of the federal poverty rate.
Yes.
For a family.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be what, $40,000 in a family of three?
Depends on how large the family is, but yes, roughly.
Exactly.
Shelley, did you get the question answered?
I think so.
You mentioned something about, proper identification. A lot of people who do not have, immigration status have documentation, but it's not necessarily, driver's license or whatever. So I just wanted to know. I appreciate your help.
Thank you, Shelley.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
410-319-8888. Come and join us here as we talk about this Family Planning Works Act that was passed. That really, I think, in many ways, what it does is, for me, it's just empowering women to take control of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And
the numbers are quite astounding. Mm-hmm. The Alan Guttmacher Institute, mm-hmm. who runs numbers nationally on maternal health issues, did a survey on our behalf in Maryland to come up with the estimated numbers, and they said that 7,900 fewer unintended pregnancies would result annually in Maryland, 4,100 fewer unintended births, and 2,600 fewer abortions.
And that's why we can project what the savings would be for the state, because you multiply that by $19,000 per unintended pregnancies, and you'll come up with between that $20 and $40 million that we will save the state.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Now, but I think the biggest issue here is getting people in. It's getting people to even know these services
exist.
Right,
and that's why we're taking every opportunity that we can, and we're asking those who are out there who understand what we're talking about to help pass along this information. And let me say, the Baltimore City Health Department is very much engaged in this. The mayor is very much engaged in this and understand the significance and the importance and the impact that this will have on all budgets throughout the state of Maryland. And so they're very much engaged. We had a press conference. Everybody came. Everybody talked about the need for us to collectively work together to make sure that we're disseminating this information, which is why we're so glad to be here with you this evening, because we know that there are people out there listening, but we want them to be sure to tell folks. And we're on a college campus, and there are a lot of young people here, young ladies here, who are not getting family health care or family care. And again, this is not just about unintended pregnancies. This is about healthiness. And so that when you do decide to become pregnant, that, you know, that you are healthy in that process. This is about having that yearly pap smear, the pelvic examination, those things that women should be doing on a regular basis so that when we do have children, that we have healthy babies. But at the same time, this will help us to prevent unintended pregnancies.
Because a lot of women who especially younger women who are living in poverty don't go to doctors. They don't take, don't avail themselves of these services.
Let me just say something about the word poverty, too, because sometimes when people say poverty, they think, well, you know, you're poor. It's not just poverty. Some of us are in college. You know, some of us are choosing to live certain lifestyles because we choose to go back to school. We're working part time. We're taking care of a child or whatever. But we don't have the kind of income that will allow us to take care of ourselves the way that we can. So this is for women. You know, we talk about the income levels, but we're also talking about women who are on this college campus who could avail themselves of these services as well.
And what's great about a program like this is it opens the door to other healthcare services. Mm-hmm. When a woman goes in because she finds out she has access to free family planning services and visits her local health department or her community health center, what she'll also find if she's otherwise uninsured is that she has an access to a range of primary care services from her local community health center on a sliding fee scale based on her ability to pay. And she might also qualify for a whole range of Medicaid services depending on various categories of eligibility, mm-hmm. not just related to her income, but related to her health diagnosis. There are many ways that we can bring women into the healthcare system, and men too. We're looking, we're talking about family planning services today and maternal health, but the community health centers are available to all low-income people on a sliding fee scale.
I think the family planning aspect of this is really is critical. I mean, it's for young women to be able to avail themselves of these services. 35,000 women in the state of Maryland, because people are sexually active.
Absolutely.
And
some at earlier ages than we would like for them to be.
But the reality is that they are.
And what appealed to me about this is so rare is there a policy that we can pursue where for a very tiny investment do we make such a dramatic difference in the outcome of individuals' lives while also making a huge difference in our bottom line in the state in a tough fiscal climate. We're spending pennies to save millions of dollars.
So, folks, 410-319-8888. We'll have all the information on our website, steinershow.org. But if you have questions about this now and you're listening to it, you may qualify. If you're a Morgan State University student, a UMBC student, Towson student is listening to the show.
Absolutely.
These doors may be open to you for these medical services for women. So you can find out if you can actually take advantage of this at 410-319-8888 to answer all the questions that you might have. And we talked earlier because the way the state did it before, I mean, you had to have had a baby.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because what happened before was that your eligibility for Medicaid was based on your pregnancy. It's because your child was going to be a low-income child and eligible. It was more about the services related to caring for your child. But if you wait and do it after you're pregnant, and oftentimes not until you're getting ready to deliver the baby, you've missed a whole range of prenatal care services that will help us tackle that infant mortality trouble.
And that's what excited me about this. Because now we're talking about dealing with folks before they get pregnant and how do we help them to continue their lives in a very productive way and availing themselves of these kinds of services.
Yeah.
And then, as Heather's already said, it is about the women, but it's also, as legislators, we're always looking at how the state spends its money and what that bottom line is going to be, and to look at an opportunity for the state to save millions of dollars and at the same time educating the public and providing women who didn't have these services before this opportunity to have these kinds of services, and the outcomes of their lives would be more productive. It was an awesome
And these cost savings, Mark, are very conservative in nature. What mm-hmm. they don't include are the cost of savings to the overall health system for getting mm-hmm. people into the system, mm-hmm. the mothers themselves, addressing potential other problems that will present in these screenings. There's no estimate in those projections that we included that are the cost of providing care for the children on Medicaid once the children would have been born. There's a whole range of services and costs that weren't even included in this calculation. It's an even rosier cost savings projection than what we're projecting here.
Because that's the fortunate part about having these kinds of services made available to you. You're talking about an opportunity for certain screenings that will maybe reveal some situations that young women may not have ordinarily dealt with.
Right.
Had they not mm-hmm. had the opportunity to come in.
And then when they do present at a much sicker, more explosive portion of
it's
the disease,
costly.
It's more costly for mm-hmm. the entire system to address.
So all this information will be up on our website.
Great.
And
excellent.
We'll get
Thank
that
you.
All out there. All the numbers you have,
yes.
we'll make sure the producers have that and can see what to put on our website. We'll have it all up there for the women to take advantage where they have to take advantage. This is, to me, a very critical and important thing. I mean, the idea that we have now 35,000 women.
35,000 women.
There are
35,000 women out there who need to take advantage of these services. And so we're here. We're here because we want you to take advantage of them. We want you to know that you can go to your community clinic. You can go to the website. You can lift the phones, get the information. But more importantly, let's on January the 1st make a difference in the lives of many women. If you know somebody out there who doesn't have health services, who is a female, please make sure they avail themselves to this.
And this, I mean, so there are many, and we'll try to, when you hit the website, the telephone numbers and what will be on our website is stanishow.org, you'll be able to see where you can go to fill out the simple application mm-hmm. to show that you're eligible for the service.
Yes, and simple is the operative word. It's a very simple
Simple is the operative word.
Because
we're talking about family planning services, pelvic exams, screenings for cancer, high blood pressure and diabetes, testing for sexually transmitted diseases, pregnancy counseling, and contraception where necessary. So mm-hmm. this is just an amazing step forward, I think.
And you mentioned something earlier, just a few seconds ago. Obesity is a big problem in our communities, and
yes.
the earlier we can attack that problem,
yes.
the greatest outcomes are going to be as well.
Well, this has been just, I'm glad we had a chance to get this out there, and we'll put it out there some more, and I'm curious to see how many women will take advantage of this, and we'll try to, oh, we got a call. Let's get a call in here before we do.
Okay.
Take this break at 410-319-8888. As soon as they get on the line, we'll get them on so they can ask their question. But what I was saying as we're waiting is that this is, to me, something that is a way of, in effect, giving women power over their own lives.
That's exactly.
Not having to be get pregnant just because you're in a relationship, because you don't have services available to you, understanding that you're under control.
Right.
It's in your control.
And sometimes we just don't realize that this information, what it can do for us. And so that's why we're really pushing this. Young women don't realize the power that they have over their own bodies. And at the same time, the information is there for you. You can take control of your life, and that's what we're putting this information out there for.
Let's go to Casey in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Casey. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, it's Stacy. I'm sorry.
Stacy, I'm sorry.
That's okay. And I want to say hello to Catherine. She's my woman of power sister. I recognize your voice.
How are you?
I'm wonderful.
Good.
I am associated with a lot of women that I know would be able to participate and take part and benefit from the services. So can you, again, because I just really tuned in, mm-hmm. tell me exactly how they do it? Is there a website? Is there somewhere they need to go?
Yeah, there is a website. It's www.dhmh. It's long. Maryland, spell it out, .gov/MMA. Boy, this is long. /family planning.
Yep.
We'll
have it on the website.
We're going to have it on the WEAA website. There's a phone number you can call, 1-855-692-4993, and 1-800-456-8900. It's going to be on the WEAA website.
And SteinerShow.org website.
And the SteinerShow.org website, right. As well as just checking out your family planning offices, the various health care centers throughout the city and throughout the state of Maryland. And you can stop by our office. We have applications, and we're going to make sure that people have them.
And I also, on top of all of the state materials, have all the background information and all the facts and figures that we've been quoting on my website, which is www.heathermizier.com/family planning.
And we'll have that on our website as well. So okay. I want to thank Delegate Heather Mizier for being at the forefront of this and battling through, and Senator Catherine Few for getting this passed. This is an important piece of legislation, important for the women in our community, important for our families and everybody. So thank
Mark,
you all
thank
very much.
Mark, thank you for providing this important community service.
It's a pleasure.
We appreciate you. We appreciate you. 410-383-1500, too, is my office if anybody wants any additional information. We look forward to working with everybody.
So we're going to take a brief break. All that will be on our website. We're going to come right back. Reverend Heber Brown is with us to talk about the blogging he's done about Baltimore Development Corporation and where's the voice of the black community in development in our city. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. I want to remind you all, it's that time of the year for our annual WEAA Members Only Appreciation Holiday Party. Thursday, December 1st, that's tomorrow, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Black Olive in Baltimore, at the Inn at the Black Olive in Baltimore. Enjoy a complimentary cuisine, special live broadcast performance featuring Marshall Booz and the MC Booz Band. You must be a current WEAA member to attend. Space is limited. Time is short, so call 443-885-2075. That's 443-885-2075 to reserve your space at this great party. The special event is brought to you by the Black Olive and Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And speaking of voices of the community, my guest in the second part of our show today is the Reverend Heber Brown, pastor of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, who blogs at faithinactiononline.com and wrote this blog that came to our attention the other day seems to be taking on the Baltimore Development Corporation and more. So, Heber, welcome. Good to have you back in the studio.
Thank you so much, Mark, for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
410-319-8888 is the number here. So the thesis basically is you spoke at they had a meeting with Baltimore Development Corporation where you spoke out.
That's right. That's right. The there's a group called the Another BDC is Possible, which is an offshoot of the Occupy Baltimore group, and they organized and pulled together this open air meeting with Jay Brody, the head of the Baltimore Development Corporation. It was right there outside of his offices, and it was a wonderful display of folks getting involved in the process and getting in the way of the process when the process is not sensitive to the people.
Now, I thought it was very rare that Jay Brody would actually do an open meeting like that. So
yeah,
you got to appreciate that a little bit that he did that.
Definitely,
right?
Yeah, definitely.
But when you say, what is it they're not doing? What is the vision? Who's being left out of the process?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think some of the people that this group invited to come speak are people being left out. They invited folks like the United Workers to come and speak, and these are, by and large, low-wage workers who, what is the chances of them having to sit down with Jay Brody to speak on their concerns and legislation that they're working on together? I mean, it was a wonderful thing. And for my piece, I wanted to help give voice, not that I can speak for the entire black community, but to help give voice to the conversations that I've been hearing for years about the problems with this city, particularly, the problems as they are spoken about in black circles and barbershops, churches and beauty salons in the black community. And for me to sit there to help to share that message and give that message to Jay Brody, I thought was very important. And also it was for people who, as I was sitting there speaking to Jay Brody, I was listening to the MTA buses ride behind my head because it was right there on the street. And so as I was speaking to him, in my mind, I was thinking about the people on the bus who were riding by, people who oftentimes probably are washing the windows downtown or changing trash cans, and, you know, who smile and get by, but the wages aren't really what they needed to be, but they have to, you know, put up with it and deal with dynamics that sometimes can be dehumanizing. And so even trying to envision the people on the bus riding behind my head as I was speaking, to ensure that Jay Brody hears some different kinds of voices. Perhaps there's a bubble around him and he's only getting some a perspective on this city and what can be the future and the vision of the city. And I wanted to make sure that he heard some other kinds of voices, at least through me.
And we've been talking some this week about vision, a different vision for Baltimore. And folks, like to hear your visions as we hear this conversation unfold at 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888 to join in on a conversation. When we look at the Baltimore Development Corporation, I mean, it appears that most of the work they do is in the Inner Harbor, newly developed areas, and what you're saying basically is the black community is at least the working class part of the black community where most people live in the city are left out of this process. And what do you think would happen? What's the alternative vision that you have for this?
Well, the vision I have in the BDC is Possible group put some wonderful things out on their website as well, and I would encourage folks to check that out too. But the vision I have is one where where the public participates in the vision. You know, I'm not going to sit here tonight and say, well, this is the vision for all of Baltimore,
right,
is what we should do. What I will say is that there needs to be more people at the table. There needs to be other voices at the table included in the discussion, and not just voices for the sake of voices, but voices with decision-making power. You know, one of the things that I think is very interesting about the Baltimore School Board is that they have a student member of the Baltimore City School Board, but that student member really doesn't have strong decision-making power on the body. It's just like a token. It's like a face, right?
Right.
And so I don't want that type of I don't want Jay Brody and others to open the door and just allow us to sit there and smile and be a part of the conversation. And then when it's time for decision-making power, we get escorted out of the door. No, it's time for other voices to be at the table with decision-making power, because the best that Jay Brody and his crew will be able to do, the best that they'll be able to do without our voices is produce an anemic vision. Because these are people who they have professional skills. They have things that they bring to the table, of course. But no, I'm more excited by the visions of peasants and street sweepers and poor folk and window washers than I am by the visions of those who have power and money and privilege and whose hands often are the hands who craft the future for us instead of with us.
So I'm curious, just in your conversations, what that vision would be. In other words, we talk about your neighborhood,
right,
where your church is,
right,
which is on Belvedere,
mm-hmm,
at York,
right,
and there's very different worlds between your world of on Belvedere and the world south on York,
yeah,
as opposed to what's across the street at Belvedere Square,
right.
I mean, that's the dividing line you talk about.
Exactly, and I think, you know, as I point out in the blog piece, you know, it's just it's a stark picture, you know, and it was just something that, you know, the York Road side and the York Belvedere side of where I live, you know, it's financed. The BDC was a part that helped to finance Belvedere Square, and you got posh stores and you got high-end furniture and fine dining and healthy food. But while I pastor there and while the church is on that end, I live further south on York Road. And so when I go home from church, I got to go past Belvedere Square and go back to my community that has four liquor stores on the same block and with a food depot spot that has less than high quality food that's being sold. And so, matter of fact, the sign, when I left the open air meeting with Jay Brody, I went back home and there was a sign for a brand new business being opened up in my community, and the sign said tobacco and groceries coming soon. I mean, what type of sign is that? What type of vision is that for the businesses in those parts of Baltimore where most black people live, where most poor people live? I left the skyscrapers where Jay Brody's office is and went back to liquor stores and check cashing joints.
I mean, the idea that you would advertise tobacco, which I thought was illegal. I mean,
and
not
groceries.
Tobacco, not tobacco itself,
right.
But advertising tobacco outdoors is supposed to be illegal, I think.
Yeah, well, on the blog, it's there. So anybody, you know, you want to check that out, the picture is on there.
So, I mean, an alternative, folks, I want you to call in and talk about your neighborhoods at 410-319-8888. We see the high-rises and the hotels popping up through downtown. Harrah's is now going to, looks like they're going to build a casino in Baltimore. As a lottery parlor. But what is the alternative vision? What's your vision of how you think your neighborhood should look, what you want it to look like? And I think that's part of the issue. How to control these food marts, these liquor stores, the tobacco selling world, inner city neighborhoods.
Yeah, and to speak to, as you said, what is it? Could you think about it? If you look at the different sectors of the city, Mark, when you think about it, schools are being closed down oftentimes without a lot of public input, and so that creates outcry there. Recreation centers, they're on the chopping block, and the mayor's trying to see if there can be a deal that's worked out there.
At least 10 will close by January 1st.
And so there's public outcry there. Look, the public is crying out in every sector and system of society because decisions are being made for us instead of being made with us. And particularly tonight, as my article speaks to more so the black community, it's just, to me, it's appalling that the black community, we are the majority numerically in the city, and by and large don't really have popular input and participation in terms of crafting vision. And somebody will say, well, we have a black mayor, we have a black this, we have a black that. That's nice. But I'm talking more about the common, regular, everyday folk, not so much folks who may have been groomed and invited into positions of power and prestige and money.
Let's get some callers near 410-319-8888. Get your thoughts and ideas. We want to hear what you think. Think about your neighborhoods. Think about development takes place and the tips that people get and payment in lieu of taxes, the pilots that people get to build their businesses. What do neighborhoods get? What should they get? What will we do with the corner of York and Cold Spring, let's say, which I pass by every day, on my way here? Or I'll make a left and go up, and you'll see vast differences in the way neighborhoods look. And what do we want in our neighborhoods? 410-319-8888. Andrea, you're on the air.
Yes, I was calling. I called the other day. So I would probably say kind of the same thing. I think, as far as, I actually live in Baltimore County, but I work in Baltimore City. I spend more time in the city than I do in my actual house. And I think, just really just kind of helping people have that sense of pride, I think if the corporation can put back into the community, make the communities look good again. I think invest in the community centers because I'm like, how are you going to have a harbor if you have no recreation centers? And so, we need to invest back in our young people. We're not going to live forever. And if we don't equip them with anything, things aren't going to improve. So I think, investing in our neighborhoods, investing in our young people, and trying to maintain that sense of community. Because, just like you're saying, there's some places that have four liquor stores. Well, maybe we obviously don't need them, but you have, better schools. Or, like I said, the recreation centers. Or senior centers. Just whatever that particular area needs, I think kind of catered to the need to generate, once again, that sense of community. That's my little comment.
No, it's a great comment. Thank you, Andrea. You want to?
I agree. And I think that, in terms of another perspective on the call, I think I would say this, that I'm not looking for the Baltimore Development Corporation to instill pride in Black Baltimore. I'm not looking for pride. I'm looking for money. That's what they deal with, money and institutions and expanding businesses. That's what they deal with. And when you talk about the York and Cold Spring or whatever area of Baltimore there's many of them, whether it's liquor stores or abandoned homes, whole blocks of abandoned homes or houses. And I think that when we look at them, we have to think about it in such a way and say, this is not an accident. Right. There were intentional policies that helped to create this and make this a reality. And so I agree with Glenn Ross, activist out of East Baltimore, who says that ghettos are created. They're not accidents. They didn't fall out of the sky. The specific policies helped to put them in place. And even if the people who created the policies, even if they had good intentions, the debate should not be about their intentions. Matthew chapter 7 says you shall know a tree by the fruit it bears. And so I'm not here to argue Jay Brody's intentions for Baltimore. I'm here to examine his fruit under his leadership and other similar groups like the Greater Baltimore Committee and other groups, these quasi-public private groups who, have the benefit of the contracts with the city, who get public funds, but public participation is not always there. And so I'm not here to argue intentions about Jay Brody or Don Fry or, whoever. I'm here to look at their fruit, and the fruit is not healthy fruit for the majority of Baltimore's residents.
So, folks,
from my view,
No, let's get your point of view out here. 403-198-8888. And Andre, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, everybody. And
good
I
evening.
Think this is really a great subject, because this very issue has troubled me, being a lifelong resident of Baltimore City. You know, back during the mayor elections, we you know, homeowners are being oppressed with excessive amounts of property taxes. You know, you ride through the neighborhood, you got 8 to 10 cameras flashing, taking and charging you for just trying to get around in your own neighborhood. And then when you go downtown, you cross a certain line, you know, you got all these great buildings, these new businesses popping up with all this free money and tax breaks given out. But then when you ride uptown, you don't see any progress. All you see is dilapidation and continued deterioration. So I'm in 100% agreement. I don't think we should have a Baltimore Development Corporation, you know, a semi-private quad, but they spending public money. You know what I mean? That just contrary to the whole system itself. You got private decisions, but public money. And yet the majority of the citizens here in Baltimore don't have a say of the tax breaks that they're giving out. If you want to increase Baltimore City's revenue, why don't we go back and renegotiate all these tax breaks that we have out here, with all this money being left on the table and given away to these so-called developers, and then we can save some of our rec centers and build better schools, but instead of still trying to tax the poor people in Baltimore for everything and still allowing the rich to go get away with everything and still pocket our money in the exchange.
Andre, thanks for your thoughts. Kieber.
Definitely agree. I mean, it's time to, I mean, these are the type of conversations I think need to happen right at, you know, the BDC and you know, in their board meetings and in public open air meetings. It needs to happen, because up to this point, it's been operating, it's been given the message, as I write about in my piece, it gives the message of just trust us, we know what's best for you. Well, I'm saying no, I'm tired of trusting others to do what's best for the black community in Baltimore City. I mean, that game is old, that song is played out, because when I look around, again, go to East Baltimore, you see gentrification in East Baltimore around Hopkins, you go, you know, to North Baltimore and see nice finance projects next to essentially ghettos and liquor depots for, you know, in the city. And so we've seen your fruit. And so at some point, I think it's a responsibility, I think, of the popular masses. I think, you know, people of color and poor folk got to come together and say, you know what, we're tired of allowing this to continue like this. We have to either get in the way, show up where we're not invited, and speak up in ways that we won't win friends. But at the end of the day, we'll together help shape a vision for this city.
I like you said, show up where we're not invited.
Yeah, we'll never be invited. you're not going to get a Christmas card or a Hanukkah card or whatever, or Kwanzaa. No, listen, just forget about it. But when we show up, speak up and get in the way, then I think things will change.
Let's go to 410-319-8888 again. And D, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I listen every day.
Thank you.
I just want to touch on two things. I'm a lifetime resident of Baltimore. I've been living in Baltimore all 38 years. And it is just to ride. I live in Reservoir Hill, and I go up and down North Avenue all day. And to see how North Avenue itself has deteriorated in just, I would say, 15, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
How many abandoned homes have come about? And it is just very sad to me to see where, at one time, even though it was poor people living there, at least people lived there. It's now it's nothing. It's just a blank building. And, I mean, they say 70% of the abandoned homes are owned by the city. When is the mayor going to do something about it? When is she going to be proactive about getting either these homes, you know, redone or what? And my second point is, I think that the city needs year-round youth employment, not just for the summer. I mean, to me, the youth are suffering. I have two teenagers in my home, and neither really can find a substantial job where they can live. I mean, when I was 19, I made enough where I could live in an apartment. Nowadays, my son is 19, he couldn't leave home, you know? And I think a lot of times the youth, what they could be using them for is to get some of these dilapidated homes built up, even if it's just on the outside.
Has
gone to pot. Like, there's no, I don't know what, I didn't vote for Stephanie Rawlins Lake, but I don't know what her vision is. She doesn't, I don't understand where she's going with, as far as the real people of Baltimore.
Yeah, that's a great question. He wrote, you can jump back into it. One of the things I thought about is, as you were talking, Dee, and you were talking a minute ago, Heber, is that, not that I would advocate this in the air, and of course I wouldn't do that, but but there are lots of empty houses, and maybe that's something people should occupy. Maybe we're going to occupy, instead of occupying an island in the middle of the Harbor Place, how about occupying houses as people who live in working-class neighborhoods, no plumbing, no electricity, are carpenters, take the houses and say, okay, we're moving in, we'll fix them up, we'll make the neighborhood better.
Yeah, and I'm glad you wouldn't suggest that over the air, Mark.
I could never suggest that. But just a thought that might pop
to
my head.
It's a thought, and I'm so glad, because people in other cities, they are doing just that, especially right. As the weather gets colder. I mean, a way that we really can raise awareness to the challenges as it relates to homelessness and foreclosures and poverty, then go back in the house, you know. And, you know, if you can't, the thing is this, I think, if you can't get, if you can't get results from the approved avenues of protest, you know, show up at the meeting at such a time and write down your name. And if you're one of the 10 people, you can say something to the director. If you can't get results out of those approved, socially acceptable, responsible avenues, then I think it's the responsibility of people to dream up ways that are not the approved avenues, but the avenues that work for the people. I think that's what happened. And, you know, from the 60s to all over the world, people begin to recognize that the approved avenues, if they are created by the same people who are in power, will be avenues that at the end result will only create a measured level of change. But if you really want significant, substantive change, then you have to at least be brave enough to dream up other avenues of getting in the way and avenues of protest to bring about results that work for the people.
Let's hear what Nancy has to say. Nancy, welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you, Mark. Great show.
Thank you.
I just want to make a comment and compare and kind of build on Dee's comment about North Avenue. A few years ago, I've been working in D.C. off and on for about the past 10 years, but there was a significant change when Anthony Williams became mayor of D.C., and he completely stopped the planned deterioration of that city. And when Dee was talking about how North Avenue has deteriorated, when Anthony Williams became mayor of D.C., he completely changed New York Avenue. I'm sure everyone remembers driving into D.C. and remembering how horrible New York Avenue was. And, you know, now when you go to D.C., it's a world-class city. I don't see any reason why those same efforts and same funds, you know, can be applied here in Baltimore.
Great.
I think we have a lot to think about in terms of how this city, what we can do in this city. I mean, there's so much. I mean, we're going to have a show on this next week about the bill that did not pass city council last week, which was to tax-exempt nonprofits who want to create urban farms and living spaces in mostly inner-city neighborhoods, which to me is, we can give pilots and TIFs to the wealthiest, and you can't help feed the people of Baltimore by creating urban farms and let them be tax-free for a few years so we can actually create something that feeds the people of the city.
Yeah.
Because right now, urban farmers have to sell most of their stuff to the wealthiest restaurants to survive. We could build a different kind of system.
Yeah.
They could do that, but it can also feed the people of the city.
Yeah.
It's sometimes our priorities are amiss.
Well, and we need that type of challenge to the system, and it's unfortunate that it didn't go through, but we need that. If you think about it, Mark, you know this, you know, and your listeners know as well, but think about the Panthers and how they even really, you know, rose to greater popularity by addressing the everyday needs of people. You know, it was the breakfast program.
It was free clinics.
It was those type of things. And I believe that a part of the raft that they drew from J. Edgar Hoover and COINTELPRO and others, a part of that wrath was perhaps fueled by the reality that the Black Panthers and other groups were creating a different type of system. We're saying, listen, your system don't work for us, so instead of buying your food, we're going to grow our own food. Now, what would happen if folks in Baltimore started growing their own food and started unplugging from, you know, the socially acceptable ways to get food? That food is connected to big money. That money is connected to lobbyists and politicians. And so, you know, we have to. I don't think there's anything new being said here tonight. I don't think there's anything new even that came out in the open air meeting. I think when we are students of history, when we go back and look at what has transpired before us, then we could say, oh, I've seen this movie before, and here's how things worked with those who came before me, and here, you know, how we might be able to do the same thing, contextualize it for our times, but here how we might be able to make some change where we are, addressing the same core issues.
Which is what you do.
Yeah. Try to.
Which, and I think, and that's why these conversations, I think, have to take place more on this show, and we also have to bring in some of the political leaders to talk about, think about different creative ways that we can take hold of our communities and control them and make them grow. Not just control them, but make them grow and be places of beauty that people want to be part of.
Right, right. We can't expect those who maintain the current system to give us vision for the future. You know, their job is to maintain and to manage what is. I think it's the job of the people to dream up, talk up, and protest up a vision for the future that works for all of us.
Reverend Heber Brown, now on your sign, I always forget this, you don't call yourself pastor of the church.
Well, I'm pastor, but also servant leader.
Servant leader.
So I serve a beautiful congregation of people at Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, and I thank God for them.
And that's what it says on the piece outside the church, servant leader, which I like.
Yes, sir.
So servant leader, Reverend Heber Brown of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church over on Belvedere. And we're going to link to faithinactiononline.com. You can read the piece, and we'll continue getting Heber here as much as he possibly can. Stay with us. We'll be back. We're going to hear from the incredible Walter Moseley and Catherine Tumber during the course of the next hour, so stay with us.